Hey guys, welcome to a dual edition of Inside the Asperger Studios / Stories. Today on the show, I'm talking with John Truitt. He is the CEO and founder of On the Spectrum Foundation, which is an organization that takes care of those who have been diagnosed with autism later in life. He's got a lot to say and a lot to share, so make sure you check it out. So sit back, relax, and I'll catch you on the other side. Hello and welcome to Inside the Asperger Studios, ASPE edition. Today on the show, I'm joined with John Truitt. He's a CEO, an artist, and also somebody who's been diagnosed late in life with autism. Welcome to the show, John.
Oh, thank you very much,
Reed. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Where would you like me to start?
Not too far back from the beginning. I mean, what's dive into when you were diagnosed and go from there.
Okay, great. So I'm 48. I'll be 49 here in 2 weeks. And I was diagnosed at age 45. I had, obviously born with Asperger's, autism, had no idea. I'd always been a little different, always excelled at certain subjects in school. And then did not excel, particularly in math calculation, math application. I learned that I'm very good at, but as far as calculating, you know, really, really poor, but excel in English, history, and business, putting businesses together. But essentially I'd gotten very, anxious and agitated, you know, and that led to, me seeking out a psychologist to find out exactly what was going on, and went through about 3 days of batteries of tests and found out that I'm on the spectrum, as well as being dyslexic, having dyscalculia, and OCD.
Wow.
Oh, and expressive recessive communication or receptive communication disorder.
When did this idea for your organization come up for you?
Pretty much immediately. It happened pretty much right after I was diagnosed.
All right. Can you tell us a little bit about your organization?
Yes, it's a 501c3 nonprofit foundation, and we're actually dedicated to identifying and accommodating and becoming advocates for adults who are on the spectrum. We obviously help everybody across the spectrum of all ages, regardless of autism or Asperger's. But I found that the adult population, both male and female, particularly on the Asperger's side, is just it's a completely underserved group of people, or even non-served group of people. There's just not really any support or accommodation or advocacy for us folks out there. So that's really the point of the foundation.
All right. What kind of services are you planning to offer with your organization?
Well, we, you know, just recently started. I had the idea for it in, like I said, right after I was diagnosed and got the foundation going in 2019. So right now it's a lot of awareness, speaking schools, pretty much anywhere, anywhere anybody mm-hmm. will listen. And we'd like that to eventuate into a couple of projects. One of them being a movie that stars exclusively folks on the spectrum, or at least in people that are depicted on screen, definitely in spectrum roles, and then as much production writing, et cetera. So that's something that I feel like really needs to be out there. I'm sure you're aware of the latest debacle yeah. with Sia, which, it's not the first time. So I feel like that's really important for those of us on the spectrum to really portray a story that comes from our angle. And then the other major initiative is a facility where we plan on bringing folks in for periods of 2 weeks at a mm-hmm. time. and going through everything from nutrition to good sleep, you know, all the things that we can do to accommodate, including getting away from noises and lights and all of that. And then toward the latter part of that, really helping folks find what vocation may be best suitable for them. So that would involve, you know, lecturers coming in and us, you know, having the ability for folks to touch things, ask questions, really do whatever, and hopefully steer them toward a productive career.
Wow. I mean, some of your stuff sounds like stuff I want to do. I mean, I have this idea in my head, and I've had it for a while, about starting a business or an organization where it'd be called a sanctuary, where it's for those on the spectrum who are dealing with, like, you're coming right out of school and you're dealing with sensory overload, and you need a place to go before you hit home, because by the time you get from school to home, you're almost burnt out. I want a place where you have therapists that are and trained staff that will ask, the first question they'll ask is, have you told your parents you're coming here? I'll have sensory inclusive rooms. They can spend maybe the weekend. They can spend the weekend if they're younger, as long as they tell their parents. If they're older, they can spend longer than the weekend. Fully phone charge banks and everything.
Oh, that's great. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Where do you see your organization 5 years from now?
Well, I really hope to take it as big as possible, as quickly as possible. Prior to getting diagnosed, I had a career in the medical device industry, which included listing a company on the Australian Stock Exchange and then creating a company here in the States that was a multi-unit organization that diagnosed and treated obstructive sleep apnea with a product that's an alternative to CPAP. So I plan on leveraging that experience and my contacts in this and really trying to take the thing large and national as fast as possible.
Well, sleep, I know, is a big issue, especially with neurodiverse people. I mean, like, especially with me, I know, for example, I have trouble sleeping, and I've even did research and found that insomnia goes hand in hand almost with autism.
Absolutely. I'm the same. Yeah. Always have been.
What is your key secrets to helping you sleep?
Well, unfortunately, I'm in the same boat as everybody else. I mean, I obviously know the good habits of sleep hygiene, which you've already had a guest on who covered that. And she did an incredible job of covering just the generalities of, you know, what one should do to help wind down. But as you know, just our minds don't really turn off. It's very difficult. I actually got about 3 hours of sleep last night. So it's really tough. And one of the other things I want to do with my foundation are leverage the contacts that I have in sleep medicine and hopefully do a proper study, like a double blind placebo-based crossover study where we have, you know, neurotypicals as well as those of us on the spectrum, and really go through the full process and see how our brains are, you know, acting differently through all of the stages of sleep, just to see if we can, you know, to see what academic evidence that they have that we can combine with the empirical evidence and hopefully come up with some solutions. I'm convinced something around that obviously will be with destimulating ourselves and not getting overstimulated. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, reduction in lights and sounds, but not just at bedtime. I think that's got to be, you know, a 24-hour thing probably to bring the anxiety down.
I think
down.
One of the main issues of sleep and in today's society, correct me if I'm wrong, is the fact that we can't put our phones down.
100%.
You'll have parents and you'll have kids who will sit there and play on their phone until wee hours of the night. I mean, and not to bring things back to myself, but when I first started blogging and stuff, I had a woman come to me, email me and say, can you help me with my son? I can't get him to get, he stays up into wee hours of the night, and he's, by the time he falls asleep, he doesn't get enough sleep and he's exhausted. What can I do? I'm like, well, there's a couple of things you could do. First of all, you need to cut down his screen time. And if he neglects to do hand over his phone or turn it off, and he's tempted to, the big issue with screen time is the blue light from the phone. There are many blue light apps out there you can install on the phone that'll drop that light down, and you can even tell it to, I told you, you can tell it to go on at a certain time at night. So he can still be on the phone, but you gotta reinforce the rule of no electronics at a certain point. Otherwise he'll be up all night.
Now, absolutely. And the blue light, as you say, is a big deal. But even just the stimulation, the mental stimulation of, you know, continuing to read an article or looking at something on Wikipedia or constantly checking, you know, your Facebook things, that will also just, it'll continue to keep you up because your mind continues to race. Yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely an issue. It's definitely it's an issue for almost everybody in America now because society is so over-caffeinated and it's so, you know, drive, drive, drive. But there are definitely some things you can do. And again, it was covered in one of your earlier podcasts, but keeping the room dark and cool, a bath before bed.
I used to do that all the time. I used to meditate in the bath all the time. Fortunately, my bath is small. Great. It gets kind of cumbersome.
Well, but it's a good way to do it. I don't know if you're familiar with diphenhydramine. It's the ingredient that's in Benadryl and most over-the-counter sleep aids in the States. There's a study out there showing that a warm bath like that is the equivalent of taking 25 milligrams of diphenhydramine, which is one Benadryl tablet. So yeah, can be pretty powerful, but it's, you know, I find a lot of people don't really follow the protocols. They kind of know what to do, but then don't do it.
I don't know if you've ever heard of a website called Sleepio. I was looking for ways to help me sleep, and they're an English company, and they walk you through a whole program. You can sign up for free, and they'll walk you through a whole program. And one of the things I learned is there's a difference between an active mind and a passive mind when you want to relax. If you're watching TV, your mind is active because you have stuff constantly going on. If you're reading a book, it's passive because it's quiet. There's no emotion. Your mind doesn't have to focus on anything. So that's why they suggest reading before you go to bed.
Yeah, that's great. No, and I had not seen that or heard that, but it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. hang on one second. Do you plan to offer any kind of social services once you're up and running?
Well, as far as, I guess, social services in what regard? I mean, we're going to be doing a lot of community outreach. You know, I'm life coaching, and for folks that can pay to have the life coaching, I'm definitely doing that, but doing a lot of it gratis and pro bono for folks that can't afford it. And then we hope within the foundation to be able to sponsor some of those folks that are coming through the facility. You know, a lot of people can't pay for a 2 week, just can't do it. They can't afford to pay for the plane flight or much less pay for the facility and the accommodation. So yeah, really, really my goal in this is to kind of Robin Hood it a little bit. And the folks that, you know, have enough money to pay for themselves and possibly somebody else, get that sponsored and then loop that back in. And we're working with a couple of other 501c3s. One group has a bed that is a destimulating bed. It's kind of like a chamber. So we'll be sponsoring and paying for portions of those to help get those to lower income families. So yeah, things like that.
All right. That's very nice to hear. I mean, because a lot of people out there are struggling. I mean, one of the big things you hear with autism is either no work and they can't pay for services like coaching or all that. And that's why a lot of the services out there are either affordable or on a sliding scale.
Right. And I think we ultimately will apply that sliding scale. That's really the way to go.
I mean,
it's the most fair.
It seems to be the most fair. I mean, what about helping with job finding? Are you going to have some kind of service like that?
Absolutely. So toward the latter part of that 2 week experience I was talking about, that's where we'll kind of not steer folks toward a career, but allow them to, you know, just kind of almost sample everything and get as much info as they can. And we're teaming up with another 501c3 called Mindshift. And Mindshift places folks across the USA. They're a 75 headcount 501c3 that's been around since 2013. So the idea there is that we're attracting, you know, the folks in and giving them, you know, all the good habits and accommodations and kind of preparing them for what it would be like in the workforce. And then we let the professionals at Mindshift come in and hopefully place them in ASPE and autistic friendly environments.
Very good. What was your response to when you found out you were on the spectrum?
It was an overall positive response. I was a little surprised at first because I don't really present as classic Asperger's. I overall make pretty good eye contact. I'm not super articulate right now because I'm overstimmed and didn't sleep last night. But usually I'm very articulate in my businesses. I've, you know, cut my own radio ads and TV spots and, you know, speak to large groups. So that was a little bit of a surprise. But once I understood, like very quickly within a week, what it really is, you know, that it's always not somebody who's in their basement playing video games, who's a computer programmer that won't look you in the eye, which is kind of the classic stereotype. You know, once I understood it, I embraced it. And my wife and overwhelming majority of my friends, you know, immediately said, you know, oh God, this makes perfect sense.
So it's nice to have a fact that your wife is very supporting in the fact that that you have autism. I mean, there are a lot of people who have trouble with relationships because of that, I know.
Well, and we were having trouble with our relationship. That's actually what led to my diagnosis. We've been married. We were married in 2003, have been dating for since 2001. So what is that, 20 years? And our marriage was getting very difficult and I was extremely anxious and wound up, which led me to become, you know, angry and, you know, all of the things that go with it. But again, once I was diagnosed, I mean, my wife had no hesitation whatsoever that this is, you know, exactly what it was. She became immediately involved, you know, in my therapy with my doctor. She's been through many, many sessions with me, as have a number of my close friends. And when I say sessions, like Ashley, my wife, has probably been through 30 plus with me, and a couple of my friends have been through 20 or so sessions. So just a really, really supportive, you know, network around me that I think has definitely helped a lot.
I mean, I have to say that's very supportive. I mean, it's hard to find friends and family that are supportive of the fact that you're diagnosed. I mean, I've read stories and heard stories of families who just won't acknowledge the diagnosis and will just pass it off as being lazy or unmotivated. And that's all they did. They won't go any further.
Yeah. And I mean, I find that just to be tragic. And I'm really pleased, you know, on a personal level, that I didn't have to experience that. But again, that's one of the things that the 501c3 will help address. You know, and that's, you know, very, very much part of the vision and goal is to try to completely dispel that type of attitude.
Anyways, let's get to know a little bit more about you. Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Gainesville, Texas. I did a lot of international travel starting at about 4 years old. My father is an international lecturer and clinician who speaks on maxillofacial orthopedics, orthodontics, and TMG, TMD, or TMJ, TMD, which became a special interest of mine because I followed him around the world, you know, learning his seminars. And that's actually what led to my medical device career. But so Gainesville, Texas, lots of travel. At age 14, I moved to Chattanooga, Tennessee to go to boarding school at a boarding school called Macaulay. Did 2 years there, came back, lived in Rockwall, Texas, graduated from high school there, and then went to college in Denton at the University of North Texas. joined the Army, lived in Hawaii for 3 years. I was a light infantry combat medic, a light infantry air assault combat medic in the 25th mm-hmm. Infantry. Came back briefly to Gainesville, Texas, got involved in the medical device industry, moved to Australia, became a permanent resident of Australia, and that's where we listed the company in the stock exchange. Moved back to Texas in 06 and was here 10 years, and then in 2016 moved to Durango, Colorado.
Wow, you moved around a lot.
Yeah, we did some moving, but I really enjoyed it. And I believe that all of that travel, particularly when I was younger, being exposed to as much as I've had, I think it did a huge amount of benefit for me as a person with Asperger's, having to constantly kind of reset. I think that was invaluable. And then also, we were places like Paris, London, Rome, over and over, going to museums and having dyslexia and being a visual thinker. I don't know if you've been to any, well, I know, yes, absolutely, you've been to the UK. I know a little bit about your background, but you know, you have headphones on, so they're speaking to you in English. They have all the visuals in front of you, and then you're actually seeing, you know, say the Sistine Chapel or whatever. So that combining all those senses really helped me learn all of that and created a great interest in those things.
Yeah, I've been through Europe. I mean, it's such a forward-thinking country, no matter where you are, England, France, Germany, they're all forward-thinking than we are, and it's just a shock. I mean, and I believe I told you when I first went to England, it was kind of a culture shock to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And they are further ahead in a lot of areas, and definitely, you know, spectrum issues, Asperger's, autism. I mean, Australia in particular is really, really out there leading the way. The UK with Baron Cohen and his work and just how they were able to get that out and get it into the, you know, the public realm. And even Canada, where we're in the Western English speaking world, we're dead last on acceptance and understanding.
Anyways, what motivates you, inspires you, and drives you?
Motivates me, inspires me, and drives me. Again, my special interests are, I love anything to do with history. Probably as far as inspiration, it's building things. And it's all the way from building companies to playing with Legos to build, you know, building a tree fort, whatever. I love to create things. And then that also led into the art, which obviously you're creating things there. So I'm right now, a huge special interest is the art. And that's a really big outlet for me.
What was the best compliment you've ever gotten?
Best compliment I've ever gotten. That's a good question. Probably that I am a great problem solver.
All right.
Not emotional problems. Tangible problems.
All right. What's your biggest failure, and what did you learn from that experience?
My biggest failure was not understanding my strengths and weaknesses. When it came to both social things and in business, up until my diagnosis, I felt like I had to be kind of good at everything, basically. And I had kind of self-accommodated in my businesses because I didn't go through the normal experience of really working for anyone else. Mm-hmm. And when you're creating the businesses, you can really kind of self-accommodate through it. So I always had a strong chief financial officer and a strong chief operations officer, directly reporting to me is kind of right and left hand. So I never thought that I was great, at putting those things together, but I definitely did not understand my strengths and weaknesses until my diagnosis, for sure. And then on the social side of it, I really, really regret not being able to read body languages and faces and understand sarcasm. I literally understand simple sarcasm. I'm zero. Like in my battery of tests that I did, that's one of the things they tested for. And out of 100, I scored one. So if it's entente and, you know, humor and kind of more advanced, like English, you and I discussed kind of English humor, you know, those type of more complicated things, I love those and very much understand them. But simple sarcasm, which most neurotypicals use often as humor, I would miss it and get offended by what they would say, because I'd miss the look or the body language. So that's something that I really regret in the past happening, and now I can kind of catch it when it does.
Yeah, I mean, not to go back to me, but it's the same thing with me. I mean, my family's always been a little bit sarcastic, my brother and my father, and they'll always catch me off guard, and my mom will always be the one that will say they were joking, Reed.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's a similar experience to what, it's a similar experience to what I have come to learn from my friends.
Yeah. Anyways, tell me about three influential people in your life and how they impacted you.
Three influential people in my life. My wife is probably the most influential, impact wise. And as I said, kind of, you know, going through this whole process, and obviously prior to that, she and I were always a team. You know, whether it was doing companies together, anything, she's always provided the structure and support. My parents divorced when I was, 8 months old. Wow. And I had wonderful step parents. So I've never viewed divorce as a negative. It was actually a positive. I look at it as I got four parents out of it instead of two, and they all possessed very unique skill sets and, you know, bodies of experience, which really I think was beneficial. And probably my best friend Pierce, who he and I were born next door to each other, 6 weeks apart. I mentioned I went to boarding school. We grew up here in Gainesville, Texas together, went to boarding school together. He ended up going to Trinity University in college. So we split physically then, but have remained, you know, very close friends our whole life. And he's actually on the board of my foundation.
All right. What makes you feel inspired or like your best self?
When I'm around a group that really understands my strengths and weaknesses, when we're on a subject that I feel like I know a lot about or I'm prolific in and I can teach and, you know, kind of lead, that's my leadership style. I'm not a physically large guy, so I don't lead through, you know, physicality. I lead really through educating and teaching. So I really, really enjoy that.
Finish this sentence. I'm at my best when?
I'm at my best when I'm not overstimulated and relaxed.
Very good. I think most of us can agree to that one. All right. If you can turn back time and talk to your younger self about where you are now, what would you tell them?
Well, if I could turn back time, the first thing I would want is a diagnosis as early as I possibly could. So I would go tell myself that, you know, look, these strengths that you have, you know, run even harder with those, and the weaknesses that you're coming across, you know, don't beat yourself up over that. In my experience in school, I was what they call 2E. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's twice exceptional. No. And it's when you're talented and gifted and then have a disability or a difference. So I was never in remedial classes or anything like that. I would vacillate in between honors classes and regular classes. And any time that I didn't get into an honors class, I really got beaten over the head that I was being lazy or I wasn't paying attention, you know, or I was distracted or that kind of thing. And that became really frustrated because kind of in the back of my head, I was like, yeah, why am I not in that honors math class? Well, it's because I had dyscalculia.
Right. If you can have a billboard with anything on it, what would it be and why?
At this point, it would be advertising my foundation because at my heart, I'm a business development and marketing guy. And absolutely. That's what I would have in the billboard. 100%.
Right. What do you think the world would look like in 5 years from now?
Oh, man. That's a tough one, and I hope it looks better than I currently think it is. I mean, regardless of your politics, it's just not good. And it's probably, I'm probably very skewed by that right now over what's going on in Afghanistan. I have a friend that I served with. I am too old to have been in Afghanistan when I got out, but he served with us, got out, and then went back in, and unfortunately lost his life over there. And he's in Arlington National mm-hmm. Cemetery. And, you know, you just see the way that the exit has been handled, and really the policy toward Afghanistan from 1979 and then even back from there. It's just a complete debacle. But yeah, that's probably really, I'm sure you get like this as well. You know, something sticks in your head. So I kind of have a dark view right now. But I'm hoping, you know, from our perspective, that awareness of the spectrum and the positive differences really start to shine through over the next 5 years. I kind of stole a quote from my doctor that really the goal is, you know, we are different on the spectrum. We're different, but we're not different bad. We're different good. So to really show those, you know, those strengths. And I'm hoping that over the next 5 years plus that really starts to come out. And, you know, I think, again, regardless of your politics, whether you like Greta or you like Elon Musk, I mean, they're kind of at opposite ends in a way of everything. They're both mm-hmm. on the spectrum, and they're, you know, smart, powerful people. You have, you know, Hopkins, who is very, very much an advocate now. Sir Anthony mm-hmm. Hopkins, who's an actor, Dan Aykroyd. I mean,
Chris Rock,
you know,
Daryl Hannah.
We could go on and on. Absolutely. And, you know, suspected Steve Jobs and probably Zuckerberg and Gates. And, you know, I see it as quite an honor to have Asperger's. I mean, if you look at who's in the club, it's a pretty cool club to be in.
I'm guessing you'd consider yourself an extrovert.
Yes, by all appearances, yes. But if you read most personality tests and the rest of it, extroversion versus introversion is where you actually charge up and get energy. So that is something I really had to learn after I was diagnosed, because yes, I really come off as a huge extrovert, and it was really grinding me down. Mm. So I, you know, have to take time, and I don't really like spending time by myself or trying to relax, because I want to engage with people. But if I don't, you know, things start to spiral with anxiety, which then turns into depression, and they go south.
I know that feeling. I mean, anytime I have gone to a family outing, it's by the time I get home, I gotta just find a place and just veg out and just let my mind quiet down.
Yeah. And I've now been able to pick up on when I need to do that much better. You know, I really, to be honest with you, I didn't even understand what anxiety was or felt like until after I was diagnosed and actually started taking a couple medicines. And I can remember the first time I didn't feel anxiety, and it almost felt uncomfortable because it was such a new feeling. I very much like the feeling now, but it was like, wow, I haven't felt this before, at least since I was a very young child.
All right. What was your favorite subject in school?
History.
All right. If you could be remembered for one thing, what would it be and why?
Again, hopefully this foundation, if I can get it to where it needs to be. If you would have asked me 4 years ago, I would have said I wanted to be remembered for, you know, being instrumental in creating a therapy that was an alternative to CPAP that really helps save a lot of lives. You know, there's a lot of comorbidities with obstructive sleep apnea, type 2 diabetes, heart attack, stroke, all that kind of stuff. And I'm very proud of that body of work. But ultimately, I believe that what I, you know, my team and I and others can achieve here with awareness and advocacy for the spectrum, that's really how I'd like to be remembered.
Now we go on to the more of fun questions. What is your favorite word?
What is my favorite word? Serendipity.
What is your least favorite word?
Least favorite word. No.
What turns you on creatively, spiritually, and emotionally?
Creativity-wise, painting, music, and writing lyrics. From a spiritual standpoint, I live in Colorado and I can find places up high where I take my dog and there's no noise, no people, nothing, and we can just spend the day. What was the third one? Emotionally, just when I'm in stasis and around my friends, you know, when I'm not wound up and I'm around good friends and family and having good conversations, that's really, really the best.
What turns you off?
Sarcasm turns me off more than anything probably on the planet. Mean people, and I know that that sounds almost elementary, but people that just, you know, they are mean to someone else or an animal just because they can be. Lack of justice. I have a real thing with things being fair, regardless of, you know, who's right. Fair is a big thing for me. All right.
What's your favorite cuss word?
Well, living in Australia, they drop the F-bomb. Like, I think you get kicked out of the country if you don't say fuck at least 20 times before lunch, right? I mean, and it means like 50 different things. It can be wonderful. It can be bad. So probably the F-bomb.
What's your favorite sound or noise?
I don't have any noises that I like at all. From a sound standpoint, it's really the sound that's of a respirator breathing when I'm scuba diving. Sure. That in and out.
Not a problem. What sound?
Lots of distractions. What? I said I've got lots of distractions here
what
today.
What sound or noise do you hate?
Okay. Anything high pitched. I really can't stand that. In any surprise sound, you know, like when I was in the Army, explosions that I didn't know were coming, you know, when you're going to do a training exercise and you kind of have a good idea of what's going on. Those noises didn't bother me, but any kind of surprise. We actually found out on the high pitch deal that my wife and I used to get into an argument every morning about 9 o'clock in the morning. And we went through and noticed, we kind of started an argument after I'd been diagnosed and said, okay, let's, you know, calm down here for a second. And we have a Samsung dryer. It plays this infernal little tune.
I got the same
at
thing.
The end of it. Okay, that was it. We had to turn that off. I can't anything like that. The ticking of a clock will drive me absolutely insane. Dripping of water, all that stuff. I'm really sensitive to noise and light.
That's funny. I am sensitive to light and smell. I have an incredible sense of smell. And hearing, I could be in a noisy place with my parents and I could hear her phone ring in her purse and she couldn't. I mean, I've been told by two different ear doctors that I have incredible hearing for someone my age.
Wow. So I'm, definitely the opposite on smelling. I've always... That's always been a hypo thing, not a hyper thing for me. My sense of smell has always been fairly poor. My hearing itself isn't really good or bad, but I can distinguish different sounds that generally other people can't. So like if I'm listening to a piece of music, I'll hear things in the music that they're doing that other people can't hear or be able to separate parts of it.
Have you ever tried that audio test where basically the younger hear one word and the older hear another word?
Not that one. I've done the one where it's left and right ear, and then you're having to do it over background noise, and then you're having to identify the words. I've done that one, but no, I'm not familiar with the one that you're talking about.
Okay. What is your favorite color?
Blue.
What's
absolutely.
Your least favorite color?
Red and yellow.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I would have loved to have been a history professor.
What profession would you not like to do?
Math teacher.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Didn't think we'd be seeing you.
When you arrive in heaven, who would you like to meet?
My grandparents.
And who would you like to interview in your life, dead or alive, but not a celebrity?
Dead or alive, but not a celebrity. Gosh, probably my great great grandfather who was in the Civil War. Well, lots of celebrities I'd love to, and not so much celebrities, but known people I would love
and
to.
Finally, interview. What book would you recommend to my audience?
As far as Asperger's and autism specifically, or in general. A couple of my favorites are The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, On the Road by Kerouac, and Anything by Steinbeck. And
finally, where can people reach you?
They can reach me at my email address is john@onthespectrumfoundation.com. So we have a website, and it's simply my first name at.
And that's it, folks. John Truitt, advocate, painter, and one hell of a nice guy. Thanks for coming on the show, John.
Reed, thank you so much for inviting me. I really, really appreciate it. And I wish you the best with all these podcasts.
Thank you very much.